Northwest Indiana. Welcome to the Crossroads Sports Radio Show, presented by Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. Crossroads Sports Radio, episode 94. I'm your host, Brandon Reif, joined by Jonathan Birdsong. JB, how are you?
Good evening, Brandon. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Recharged after a good weekend of football, you could say, and ready to start another week. Fall is in the air.
Absolutely, yes. First official spring day of fall was like, what, a day or two ago? Something like
today.
That.
Yeah. Today is official fall.
Yeah, that's right. And then, like, yeah, we're the Indiana weather's kind of gradually changing over just a little bit. Still supposed to be a little warm. I'm giving everybody the, the weather update. There we go for the rest of the week. But yeah, pretty good weather here in Indiana in Circle City still. But like I said, it is, it's getting a little bit cooler. So, but yeah, we're ready to definitely talk some football tonight.
Absolutely. We've got a big show packed for everybody this evening. We've got recap for the NFL week number three. Week number three it concludes tonight with the Chicago Bears and the Washington Redskins at 8 o'clock getting underway. We've got college football to talk about this evening. It was a wild weekend in the college football world. We also have an interview with Eastern Kentucky women's basketball coach Samantha Williams tonight. What time is she calling in at, John?
She is calling at 7.
7, okay. All right, 7 o'clock will work. So we can break it up. You want to go college football first, or you want to go NFL start?
I think we better go – I mean, it's kind of up to you, man. We can go college football first since that was, Saturday.
All right, well, in words of the GOAT.
Let's go!
He says let's go, so let's go. We're going to go straight into college football. I guess, John, let's go with the biggest game of the week. That was a dud, I thought, biggest surprise.
Uh-oh.
Michigan getting destroyed by Wisconsin up in Madison. The Big Blue is, oh boy, I think this weekend after that performance up there. What was your thoughts on that shellacking up there in Madison?
Yeah, rather than focus on what Michigan did do, I'd like to focus on what Wisconsin did do. Wisconsin, offensive line just kind of manhandled Michigan all throughout the game. And everybody who rushed that night, I think I tweeted out, man, everybody who rushed that night looked like a Heisman Trophy winner, I can't believe Wisconsin I can't believe Wisconsin doesn't score 2 touchdowns. That's how good the efforts Wisconsin put out there. Just kind of shellacked them from the time the whistle blew to the end of it. They kind of just controlled the game, controlled Michigan, and like this definitely wasn't a game Harbaugh. It doesn't look good at all because they never were in it to begin with, seemingly, and they never could. They didn't get back into it. And I know a lot of alumni, Woodson, being the most colorful one on TV was his words discussed it. And I think there's probably been some bigger wins that you could have said off Harbaugh's tenure there at Michigan. You could have been disgusted. That wasn't a good one. I couldn't necessarily say I was disgusted by it, but that necessarily wasn't a good one. He still, as we know, you and I joke around about him being on a hot seat or a watch, and I think that's someone that is kind of forming right now. Actually, I really do, but because he's got some winnable games in front of him, but he's also got some tough games in front of him as well. And like they just don't look like, Brandon doesn't look like if they have to play, and I know they do. If they have to play Notre Dame in the next 2 weeks, I do believe, I could be wrong. He had to fact check me on that one, Brandon. If they had to play Notre Dame, they don't look like they could beat Notre Dame. And that's kind of one of the feathers he needs in his hat. Throughout this season, the last game of the year, which would be Ohio State.
It's not DEFCON 1, then?
It's definitely a DEFCON situation. Again, I don't necessarily think they let him. It's definitely. I don't think they necessarily fire him. It's just a situation where he doesn't have any big wins.
Right.
He doesn't have any significant wins. He has wins. I mean, and I know It's horrible. Like Tom Allen would you know cut off his right arm for the wins that Harbaugh has against, you know, the teams that, you know, that you post that you with Michigan beats. Michigan consistently beats IU. Michigan consistently beats, you know, the Eastern Michigans and the Western, you know, the armies of the world, right? But that's not what they pump all that hype and money and, you know, what they brought Harbaugh from, you know, from the pro ranks. They brought you to beat Michigan State and Ohio State. And consistently over the years, he hasn't done that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I thought, you know, I figured the game would be a lot closer than what it was. I think it, like you said, as much as bad Michigan played, I think you gotta give credit also to Wisconsin for their offense and their defense. You know, Wisconsin, people thought, you know, they would have a good season, but, you know, they struggled last year, so you didn't think they would be ahead of everybody in the Big Ten West. But I put on Twitter on Saturday afternoon, I said, you might as well go ahead and punch their ticket to Indianapolis. I don't see anybody else overtopping them in that Big Ten West this year to head over down here to Indianapolis. But I like the way they played. Cohn, I like that quarterback. He's a Long Island guy from New York, coming in and playing that system. And the coach, I really like the coach there at Wisconsin. No nonsense. I think it's Paul Chris, I think is his name. But yeah, I like that. I like what I see from Wisconsin, and hate to say it, but it might be a big red and white battle down here in Lucas Oil Stadium against Ohio State and Wisconsin.
Yeah, you know, Brandon, Wisconsin is going to have to avoid the trap games where they don't give their best effort on the road or something like that. If they have to play, you know, I think they do play Iowa, but like, you know, the teams like Iowa or Penn State, they can't take those games slight. This is because they got this feather in their head. That's historically something that they've done, you know, like get a big win and then kind of choke it up like in the next 2 weeks or so against a lesser opponent. You know what, Brandon, I like them. I like a Wisconsin. Like, you know me, I don't ever say nothing about gambling, right? I like Wisconsin if you're gambling on them, if you're betting on anybody other – anybody not named Ohio State, as far as Big Ten plays, I would definitely put money. I mean, I don't gamble, but you know what I'm saying? I would feel great. I would feel great, like a great chance that they could win. If you, because like I said, Wisconsin looks good this year. But I would pause on it, you know what I'm saying, from a, you know what I'm saying, putting them in the top four, but even put them in the top five of the power rankings. Because they always kind of let fall flat, and I don't know. I hope they don't. I hope they make it even more competitive this year.
Okay, good. Let's go to the other big game of that Saturday. It was a night game, Notre Dame and Georgia. Georgia kind of took control there in the second half. Notre Dame kind of make a late rally, but you know, Georgia. It looks good on the resume for Georgia. They're still up there. They beat a top 10 team. I got two routes I'm going to go with this. Number one, Georgia. Yeah, they beat a good team, and it's what's going to look good on that resume. But here's my thing. Kirby Smart, I'm still not impressed with him, John, even after this game. And I'm going to tell you why. Kirby Smart coaching reminds me of that 70-year-old man that goes out and buys that Ferrari, and he doesn't drive it above 35, 40 miles an hour. You know, he doesn't, okay. He doesn't try to peek it out. He doesn't try to, you know, I don't even think he's tried to peek out his own team. Does that make sense? Like, I feel like Georgia's got so much left in the tank, and he plays so safe of a game with the Bulldogs that we really don't even see what kind of real Georgia we have. They played that very quiet, boring, safe game.
Well, you could say that. It wasn't like Notre Dame wasn't trying either. Notre Dame tried to run the football, could not run with the football with any success during throughout the game. They found some success in the passing game, but again, I think, you know, saying kind of what always kind of happens with between Georgia or Notre Dame tangles up with an SEC team, the speed just kind of caught up with them. But it kind of. You can't, if you're a Notre Dame fan, you can't necessarily hang your hat on, oh man, we kept up with Georgia again. Because again, they don't have, I don't think, it's crazy that I don't think Notre Dame has a win against a top five opponent, like from a power school, from a top five. They don't have a win like the last two or three seasons. So,
right.
We always give credit and kudos and to Notre Dame and the coach staff, Brian Kelly, down south, up in South Bend. But for scheduling heavy, but you know, so at some point they got to schedule whoever they schedule, whether that's Central Michigan or the real Michigan or Georgia, they got to beat. They got to, you know what I'm saying, show and prove and put some dubs in the column, in the win column.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but yeah, Notre Dame side, they played well. They handled the speed of Georgia decent because I think Georgia played too safe of a game. I felt Ian Book played okay. There was a couple fourth down plays where I feel like Notre Dame, there was one fourth down I feel like they should have gone for it, and they didn't. They punted to play safe. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess I felt like I was let down from the game overall. I was expecting a lot more excitement and spaz, and Kirby Smart just drove that little Ferrari out there and just revved it up once and went 30 miles an hour with his team.
So what do you think Notre Dame's chance against Big Blue?
I think they lose a close one.
Okay. You think it's
up in Michigan. I'm going to give Michigan the benefit of the doubt.
Man, I don't.
But they better figure out the quarterback situation, because I think Shea Patterson's
right.
Overrated. McCaffrey, and then you got McCaffrey who's got a concussion, so he might not even play this week. What's the old Jonathan Birdsong motto that you've stolen everybody else? If you've got two quarterbacks, you don't have any.
Right, you don't have any. If you have two, you don't have any, unless you're Nick Saban.
Yeah, true. So. Like I said, I think Notre Dame's at 10 wins. I had them at 10-2 for the season, and they're right on the way with it. So we'll see what happens
with that.
Ball State only losing by 11 to NC State, John. Not too bad.
Not too bad. The Cardinals had to go across country to play ACC opponent they probably don't really have a whole lot of familiarity with. But it's definitely good from a competitive standpoint to get the guys out. You know what I'm saying? To get the program where the program wants to move in a different upper echelon type direction, not necessarily always playing mid majors all the time. But yeah, they scored first. That's what you can say. And there was a little bit of a brouhaha with the guys getting physical and mixing it up. So the Cardinals didn't go there to lay down. That's the one thing. The fighting Cardinals. Came out in the game. That's for darn sure. But again, like I said, they kind of got out physical, kind of a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Bit off a little bit more they could chew. The game was at NC State. So unless you are a traveling team that's accustomed to doing so, those some of those factors don't necessarily bode well for you when you're trying to get a W in an unfamiliar place with an unfamiliar opponent.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, did you know going into this game, Drew Plitt was top four in the nation? Actually, no, he was number one in the nation for passing yards.
Yeah, he's blowing up. unbelievably blowing up. Yeah.
Yeah. Couple notables, Indiana knocking off UConn. I really don't have too much to say about that besides they lost one of the their big left guards, Coy Cronk, who I know personally. I've known the kid since he was 2 years old back home, but they lost him for the season with a leg injury senior year. So hopefully he can get a medical red shirt for next season for IU. But IU, easy win. It looks like Penix will be back possibly this week for the Hoosiers. So kind of looking good for them.
Yeah. Tall order, though. They got Michigan State coming up, so they're going to need Michael Penix to play lights out if they want to take the next step and actually be what? 4-1. That's what they think they'd be going to say.
Yeah, true. Also looking, just a quick note, John, our boy from TCU, Mr. Problematic, had another 160-some yards rushing and two touchdowns, Anderson. So if it's working, you keep giving the guy the ball, right?
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. Like I said, man, wow, that's not SEC, that's Big 12. Wild Big 12 play. It's kind of odd sometimes when you see a big play, a big yardage plays like that come out of a running back when, you know, so the SEC, Big 12 is all about wide receivers and quarterbacks. So, yeah, definitely keep him on your watch.
Yeah, looking at the other Big 12 game that was big that evening, Texas with a big win over Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State had a chance. I didn't understand their four-minute offense that they played like they're playing really, really slow. I didn't understand that at all this week with Gundy.
Yeah.
But they weren't out of it. They kept battling. And that freshman they have, quarterback, he's going to be slinging it for the next 3 years for Gundy.
Yeah, I didn't quite – I had picked Texas to win the game, but that was kind of with my head. But with my heart, seeing what Oklahoma – and it might just be because Oklahoma State, it might just be because they're still young, but I thought they would be a little bit different in the outcome once I start looking at the, like, the numbers they could put up offensively. But, yeah, they kind of sputtered down there to the – they sputtered at the end for sure.
Yeah, absolutely they did. So Texas with the big win. Getting down the road, we're going to set up for that Texas-Oklahoma game, and it should be a good one when they play. A couple notes, John, I have from this week. Not shocking news at all. I mean, I guess it is shocking news, but not shocking if you're an NFL or you're a college kid these days. Houston, where Dana Altman, not is it Altman? Yeah, Dana. Why am I thinking Altman is basketball? I can't think of his name. What old West Virginia coach went down to Houston. So their star player, Derek King, star quarterback, tore it up first week, tore it up the second week, played really well. He announced today he's transferring, and he is going to sit out the rest of the season and redshirt the rest of the season. You had four games afterwards to decide. So he gains his eligibility. He's going to transfer. Houston started 1-3. This year. So he figured it wasn't going to work best for him. So he's going to transfer and go to another school, probably start, and we'll see what happens next year. That's another reason why I do not like these new transfer rules.
Well, you know, Brandon, that's a whole nother story. That's a whole nother show. We'll have to plot that out. There's some positives. Well, Brandon, we can talk about for a little bit, man. Coaches can go wherever they want to. And no sit out, no red shirt.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, it has to benefit the players too. But I kind of see what you're saying. Like, he kind of quit on the team when,
yep,
you know, when that's something that we, you know what I'm saying, as people who follow sports and people who actually put, and people who actually play sports, like, that's the biggest no-no of all. But, you know, you're definitely in his right to do so. So that's what he did. He'll probably find his way home to a better school, be a slinger.
One last note I have before we go to the trophy case and the trash can. So, John, Saturday night, Pac-12 football. You know I love myself some late Pac-12 football, and where I can do some little bit of put a little change on it. Washington State, John. Washington State Cougars. I'm going to bed. It's the third quarter, towards the end of the third, about 5-6 minutes to go in the third. Washington State's up by 32. Spread's 18. Spread's 18. So I'm okay. 32. It's a pretty big lead. They're probably, UCLA hasn't shown any offense. Chip Kelly's team's garbage. I feel pretty good. I'm gonna win this bet. Go to bed.
Yeah.
John, I wake up Sunday morning, and I look, and Washington State loses 68-66. To UCLA in regulation, not even overtime. They had a 32-point lead erased in literally 20 minutes of football.
Dude, I wish I could tell you my story. I guess I can. I wish I could tell you my story about how I fell asleep on the Atlanta Falcons in the Super Bowl that they lost and choked off. But, yeah, that's exactly the same thing that happened. Yeah, they blew it. They blew it. It's the wacky Pac 12. I almost said Pac 10. It's the wacky Pac 12. You know, BYU looked like some world beaters last week, and then got routed. Then they damn stuff against the other Washington team.
Yeah.
Looked like some world beaters as well. USC. I'm just talking about Pac-12. USC lost their quarterback, another quarterback, right? But still ended up beating Utah, I do believe. That's who they played. Yeah,
yeah,
beat Utah.
They did.
So there's no. Unfortunately, the Pac-12 is going to cannibalize on one another all this year. It might bode for like what's to come in the future for next year if these teams are, you know, are grow together. You know what I mean? But like this year, so many mistakes. It looks and like as far as like preparation or so many mistakes and like you know some you know guys getting knocked out and then you got to come with a whole game plan. But like yeah, the Pac-12 is going to totally cannibalize. It looks like it's going to cannibalize itself all year. Stanford might beat, you know, Oregon next week, and then Oregon State, Oregon beat Oregon. It's going to be wacky. I mean, it's entertaining.
Right. Well, Oregon just beat Stanford handedly this past Saturday. So
yeah,
they just knocked them off nicely.
I wouldn't count Stanford and the Cardinals out going further though. I really wouldn't. They'll get some wins.
Okay. Picks wise, John, from last week, you went 7-0 on your picks. I went 6-1. The only one I missed was Michigan. So it was a good week overall.
We didn't pick UCF. We didn't have that as a game, did we?
We did not.
Is that going to be in the trash? Is that what's coming up? Are they in the trash?
Well, let's go ahead and while we're talking about it, let's go ahead and hit the trophy case in the trash can. So trophy case is kind of bare this week. I've only got two teams in the trophy case. Okay. Wisconsin and Appalachian State are the two teams that go into my trophy case this weekend. Wisconsin, obviously, we just talked about how well they played against Michigan and kind of solidified their dominance in the Big Ten. And then Appalachian State, I put some good money on Appalachian State. They knocked off Carolina, knocked off Mr. Mack Brown. So Appalachian State, I mean, they're no slouch. They've never been a slouch ever since they played up in Michigan and beat Michigan in 2007.
Yeah. Yeah, ain't no dancing going on. No dancing going on in North Carolina. That's for darn sure.
No,
but Brent, I know you still got to go, but no trophy case for Alabama. My man had like 5 touchdowns.
Come on, man. Come on. Who they play?
I know who they play. Right. I know who.
Who they play? Sorry, Justin Powell. John, you may be a glutton and throw 5 touchdowns against that team.
Man, I said that just for Justin Powell.
Yeah. And I've got two teams in the trash this week. Number one trash team goes to me, Michigan. You're going back in the trash can again. Second time this year already. You're going back to the trash. You went in the trash for Army. You're definitely back in the trash against Wisconsin. And you may not make yourself out of it. Just going to throw that out there.
You can go in the trash even if you win.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So I'm just curious. Where's Nebraska at? Because they won. Barely.
Won. They were in the trash the first week, if you remember right, based on the performance and the morals, because you know we're all about integrity here.
Right.
After that, they got out of the trash can. And they almost went back in the trash can this week, and they got out of it.
Yeah, they would have been in trash. Yeah.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I was ready to put them in trash. I had the spot cleared on my sheet for them. And then the other team I have in my trash this week, the UCF Golden Knights, finally in the trash can. John, you lose the Pitt, who is terrible. Your college football thoughts.
They're not terrible.
Your college football playoff thoughts, they go in the trash as well with it.
Yeah.
So I lost. John, I had a chance to win good money. I took UCF, just so everybody knows, you looked on my Twitter, I took UCF second half or comeback money line because I was like, they're going to come back. They were down 21 at the point. I said, they're going to come back. You watch. So I put money on them.
That's what they do, right?
The line was huge, and I said, oh, my God, this is going to be great. And it started out just rolling points, rolling. They couldn't stop a damn thing for Pittsburgh. And then next thing you know, a field goal at the end wins it.
That
all just blew up in smoke. So UCF is back in the garbage. We don't ever have to hear about them the rest of the year. And we'll see you next year.
Well, they'll still float around the top 25, but yeah, they won't sniff the top 10 unless it's total bedlam. And I don't mean that just because that's the Texas and Oklahoma game. That's a total bedlam that goes on, and Alabama loses like three games. That's the only way UCF gets inches or sniffs the top 10. They have to play. You know what, Brandon? Like, they have to play in a better league. Like we talked about it like off radio. We probably should have kept it for the radio, right? About if you swap conferences with them and North Carolina, not North Carolina, but Clemson, could UCF win the ACC? I think they could. I think it would be. I don't think it would be as dominating as Clemson, but I think they could win the ACC. It would be those times when Miami has a little bit better or more athletic teams. They would have to say account for. Miami's just in a down year this year. You know, next year they'll be top 10 again. You know,
mm-hmm.
But I think UCF could win the ACC. Now, when you turn that kind of equation to the Big Ten, I think UCF in the Big Ten kind of becomes. They kind of become like a Purdue. You know, over time they kind of like. Should they beat Purdue today? Absolutely, but you know. Kudos. I mean, they'll bounce back, but, you know.
Okay.
I'm a UCF fan.
I know. You love UCF for some reason.
I'm a little sad.
I was sad to see him lose, obviously, for my wallet, but the Golden Knights are okay. They have a good quarterback, and I think they'll bounce back. I just don't think we'll hear about them. We won't have to hear about the college football playoff talk for them for a while, so which is great.
Yeah.
So. All right, John, it is almost 7 o'clock. We got our special guest on the hold, so let's bring her on.
All right.
John, go ahead and let you do the introduction for it, since you always do the great introductions.
Oh, man, you put me on the spot. With Coach Samantha Williams, thank you for coming on to Crossroads Sports.
Hello, good evening. Thanks for having me.
Coach, as everybody's getting ready to find out, you are the newly appointed head coach of Eastern Kentucky University. They play in the Ohio Valley Conference. Tell us how. I know you got appointed to the position back in the springtime. How has the reception been going through the summer? Are you still kind of like a cloud nine kind of feeling?
Well, the reception has been absolutely amazing. You know, from the community to the administration, the student body, you know, the ones that are in tune with sports, the transition has just been great. And, you know, right now, a lot of it is consisting of changing the culture, changing the mindset of the current team and, you know, what's all been going on here in the past. And that's really the bulk of it right now, is trying to change the culture.
Okay. I'm a spoiler alert, everybody here. You spent some time before you took this particular position. You spent time at Duke. Spent time as assistant at long time at Louisville.
Yes.
What can you tell us a little bit about you? Me and Brandon are. I've been totally transparent. Me and Brandon are total Duke marks. What is it like? We'll get to a serious conversation in a minute.
Sure.
I promise you. But what is that whole experience like, just being on campus at Duke?
You know, Duke is in a league of its own in terms of just the academic atmosphere and the prestige. You know, just when you tell people, "Hey, I coach at Duke," it's a whole other. It's just been a whole other level, in my opinion.
Okay.
And then you know, with the athletics. You know, it has great support as well. And then, you know, you got Coach K, who's a legend, who will go
right
down as one of the best ever to coach the game, whether it be college or pro. So it's just it is as special as what people think. It's just I'm very, very honored to have coached there.
Okay.
I went to John, quick
ahead,
story.
Brandon.
I actually went down to down there to a game when I was at Ball
uh-huh.
State. I think it was 2006
mm-hmm.
or 2007, but Ball State played Duke down there for women's, and I was with the girls' basketball team. And let me just say that Ball State got the brakes beat off them down there really bad. I think Elena Beard was playing at that time.
I think she graduated in 08. I mean, sorry, 06.
So, my goodness, that was just, whew. I saw the campus and the beat down.
Yeah, Cameron Indoor is a special place.
Okay. Well, I don't want to give, you know, saying another university a whole lot of love. We came to talk
sure,
about
sure,
talk to you
right.
and talk and talk to you about EKU. I won't tell anybody your age or anything like that. But you've been a long time assistant. Why was this the perfect time to take this particular position?
Well, you know, I've always thought that it was going to be a special situation for me to take my first head coaching job, and believe it or not, the state that the program was in is something that challenged me. That to me is a challenge, and something that I think that I'm ready for that challenge. You know, I'm not sure if you know EKU's record last year, but it was 0-27 in Division I in women's basketball.
Oh my.
Overall 2-29, but did not win a Division I game. And, you know, I know the history of the program. It won back in the late 90s, early 2000s. So it can, in my opinion, be among the top in the conference again, the OVC. And so just knowing who my recruiting contacts were and where I've been, I felt confident that I could come in and make a difference and turn the program around.
Does your coaching style change now that you got the bigger tier?
Coaching style doesn't change. I do have to be cognizant of the players that I have in the program right now and their strengths and weaknesses. So, you know, what my goal how I tend to play is it's going to be more tempo, shooting more threes, but that might not necessarily be the case right now with the personnel. Mm-hmm. So I have to play to their strengths right now until, you know, we can get this thing going recruiting-wise and getting those type of players in my system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Coach, what is your going into this fall, your new year, first year there, what expectations do you have set for yourself and then kind of the team-wise for this season coming up to make it – because you obviously need to make strides. You just said they came off of a winless season – last year against Division I, what strides do you need to make this year?
Well, I think that one of the things that, like I said, in changing the culture, trying to just have them pay attention to the little things and to the process and what that takes in terms of being a winner and what that looks like. And then also I have to make sure that I don't get ahead of myself and show patience. You know, I'm a very competitive person. And, you know, I've won everywhere that I've been. So I have to recognize that the situation is a little different right now. And it's going to be a process. And so you cannot rush the process. You have to do all the things the right way. And then for the team, you know, we are going to be in better shape. We're going to be competitive. And I want us to be mentally tough. Those are the areas right now that I'm really, really focusing on. Because in this league, the OVC, the top five teams are averaging close to 70 points a game. The top three teams are averaging almost 79 points a game. That's a lot of points a game. So I have to get this team to learn how to play fast. But more importantly, you got to put the ball in the basket.
Okay. Perfect.
Coach, how have you seen – since your playing days, and since your playing days at Auburn, you know, spoiler alert again. Coach is a player too, folks. Since your playing days at Auburn, how have you seen the women's? I mean, can you speak on it? Somebody who's actually lived it. How have you seen the women's game grow and change?
Well, they are much faster and quicker. I think nowadays, I think. You know, on the negative side, I don't think they shoot it quite as well as some players back in the day. But I think that, you know, with the emphasis on ball handling and trainers and how I look dribbling, that's all, you know, big in our game right now. But I think they're bigger and stronger because the emphasis on training is stronger now than back, you know, back then.
Okay. Brent.
Yeah, Coach, what is one thing you kind of taken with you through all your stops with coaching that you, when you were at Duke and you've taken it and you've kind of built that to Louisville to now where you're going to Eastern Kentucky?
I think, again, I alluded to it earlier, it's just the process of what winning looks like, whether it be how you eat, you know, getting enough sleep, things like that. You know, I've been taught and mentored by some of the best coaches in the country. And so, you know, again, I know what winning looks like. And so just the process of what being a winner looks like. I think I can take that from all of my stops, you know, as an assistant coach.
Okay. Let's see.
Okay.
I had another one, John, but I spaced on it. I was going to, for the upcoming season.
But,
Okay, Coach. Well, so you think about running up tempo this year, right? Correct.
We're definitely going to be more up tempo than they were last year and in previous years. What we have to do, a couple things, just stat wise, we have to take better care of the basketball. The assist to turnover ratio was not very good, and then you know just another thing to gain some more possessions. I want us to be a better rebounding team, both on the offensive end and the defensive end.
Right.
If you look at the stats, we just gave up too many offensive rebounds, and then our offensive rebounds were not very good. So that's some of the things that I've been emphasizing to get more possessions so that we can score more points. Because, again, you know, we were actually last in the conference last year in points scored a game. At about is 54.5, and I believe the top team was about 78. So you're talking like a 23-point difference. So that's not going to cut it. We're trying to get more possessions as a team, and then, you know, just be tougher mentally going against our opponents.
Mm-hmm. So when you so if you get more possessions, so does it really matter if you have a great shooting percentage?
It does and it doesn't. I think if you don't shoot it that well, then you better bust your butt and go after the boards and get more possession, offensive rebounding. And then what we're also going to do, we're going to play more man defense and try to speed up our opponents so that we can, you know, maybe get some steals that'll lead to easy layups. So that's some, you know, a few of the ways we're going to try to create more possessions for our team this year.
Okay. Coach,
perfect.
Coach, unless you got another one, Brent, I got one more.
Yeah, I got one. Coach, and I tried looking it up. I couldn't find anything online for it. During the summer, how important is it when you first get in front of your team, you start doing your workouts, but also to kind of get them in front of the community to build that new culture?
And that's one of the things that I have been talking to with our team. You know, we're not only trying to obviously win more games, but we're trying to put more people in the stands. And for that to happen, I feel, you know, like at Louisville, we were in the top three in attendance every year. So, you know, I got to see firsthand how you grow your fan base. And so I feel like Richmond is a community that is just hungry to win again. So we're going to be getting out to, you know, girls and boys clubs, churches, and so that our community can connect with our players. We want those little kids or those families saying, hey, I want to go see Susie Q play because I want to see her play tonight. We have to connect with our community. So that's something we are addressing.
Okay.
That's actually one of my questions. Similar, like how is as a fan of whatever team that I cheer for, like it always infuriates me when said player from local high school is talented and great goes somewhere else because said team didn't recruit him or her. So I'm glad that is very important.
It is very important. That's why we are really focusing on recruiting the state of Kentucky so that our community and our state, you know, they are familiar with some of the top girls basketball players in the state so that they want to come see those kids play. And then we also want to put a lock in any other state close by. We want to recruit that state hard as well because we want fans, whether it be from those players' hometowns or their states, to come watch and play as well. We're trying to grow the fan base any way we can.
Mm-hmm. Well, Coach, I know you had a decorated career over at Auburn, but in the John's question, how the heck did Louisville let you leave?
Well, to be honest, you know, I don't brag about it much, but I was a top five recruit coming out of high school, and neither Louisville or Kentucky were the programs they were today. Had that been, you know, the case of what they are today, that I'm sure that would have changed or been different. But that's how that happened.
How much different is recruiting now from just kind of have you seen it over the last 10 years even?
I'd even say 5 years. It is a lot different because you're fighting. One, there's so many more people that have a hand in it or want to put a hand in it, whether it be trainers or, you know, family members. They want to have a hand in what that player does. And so the player has to listen to, you know, 10 different voices and what they should do. And then you have the presence of social media that has changed the game a little bit. And how it changes is, those kids, those recruits, they get instant gratification from, you know, a like or a retweet, or they'll see their video. So, it, you know, it just changes it a little bit for the good or the bad, whatever, however you want to accept it. They just get more, I can't quite describe it. They just, they mm-hmm. see themselves more. They want more instant gratification. They want to see themselves. That's why you see a lot of, you know, when kids commit, you'll see these movie productions of them choosing a hat or them walking through the gym. And it all is great, but it's just, it's really changed as opposed to just, you know, back in my day, we would just say, hey, I'm going to so-and-so. And it was, that was it. There was no video production of it.
Okay.
You know, or you Project. Know how, kids now, they're picking hats. They got five hats on a table.
Yes.
Or they're taking off sweatshirts, and they got three different sweatshirts. I'm like, okay, which one is it going to be? So it's changed a little bit.
Well, I blame ESPN for all that too. So.
Well, yeah, I agree. The nature of the
Coach,
beast.
Coach, I have somewhat of a non-basketball question.
Okay.
As you did go to Auburn, how big is the Auburn-Bama rivalry? Does it spill into basketball?
It's, you know, I have been very, and I joke about this, I have been a part of some of the of colleges of college basketball and football's greatest rivalries ever. And that's mm-hmm. starting from Auburn, Alabama. You know, I've been at Duke with North Carolina, and then the Louisville, Kentucky. I mean, I just, but the Auburn, Alabama, that's real. That's real. I had some of my better games in college when I was playing against Alabama because I couldn't stand them.
Okay. Just well, you can bracket yourself for a little more. What was your highest point total against Alabama?
That was 20.
Or best stat line. Best stat line against Alabama.
I don't remember the stat. I don't remember. But it was in the 20s.
Okay. In the result.
John, that's a real team player because if it was, she wasn't a team player, she'd be like, oh, I remember it was 32 points and 18 rebounds. And
yeah, it was against Alabama, though.
Okay,
but
perfect.
You know what's funny about that? Now one of my who I love to watch and listen to is Nick Saban. And, you know, unfortunately, he works in Alabama, but, you know, he's still a great coach. I love to listen to him.
Okay. Well, Coach, we won't keep you on too long. We do appreciate you calling in.
No problem.
We love talking hoops with just about anybody, as you can
Absolutely.
Tell. We wish you nothing but well going into your season this year. I think actually they play, Brent. I think they actually play IUPUI this year.
We do. We're up there December 20th.
Uh-oh. Better mark it on our calendar. December 20th.
December 20th, 7 o'clock. We're at IUPUI.
Perfect.
All right. I think me and Brandon will be there for sure.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We'll
make an appearance. Don't be a stranger.
Absolutely, Coach. Well, thank you for calling in once again. Like you said, good luck this season, and we'll be following you guys along the way, and we'll see you on the 20th.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Y'all have a good evening.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You too.
Uh-huh.
All right, John, that was Coach Samantha Williams, Eastern Kentucky women's basketball coach. Just a little bit, hey, I liked how she said that rivalry with how strong it was. It's real. Alabama,
real.
Auburn, it's real. And, you know, thinking about it, yeah, she's been a part of three huge rivalries. Kentucky, Louisville, and then Duke, Carolina, and Auburn, Kentucky. I think the only one she's missing is Indiana, Purdue.
Well, yeah, maybe she's going to start with IUPUI East Kentucky. Let's hope.
Uh-oh. Yeah, exactly. Okay, perfect. So, no, that was a great interview, Coach. Yeah, I looked on there. I said, uh-oh. I said she's calling. I said, I'm glad you were talking, John. I was able to go and screen the call and talk to her for a minute or so, and I came back. You had no clue.
I wasn't talking about nothing but talk as UCF losing.
I know. So that was good. I came back. You were still talking, so I said, that's perfect. A little behind the curtain for everybody. All right, John, before we switch gears to the NFL and a lot in the NFL, we got to do our Week 5 picks for college football this week. Going into this Week 5, I'm 18-8. This is no spread, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. My spread picks go out later. John doesn't do spreads, so we're doing straight up. I'm 18-8. John, 21-5. 3 games up on me. Last week, I thought I was going to be able to get you on at least one, but that didn't happen, so... we've got a 6-game slate this week. And first one, we've got the Minnesota Golden Gophers, who have struggled kind of as of late. We've got them coming to Ross-Ade Stadium against a Purdue Boilermakers team who's looking to improve from 2 weeks ago's performance against TCU, coming off a bye week.
Oh, man. It's tough. I hate the dead air too, sounding too, man. Who you picking, Brendan?
I'm gonna go with the Boilermakers because it's a must win.
I'm gonna go with Purdue too. I'm gonna go with Purdue too. Even though I'm gonna go with Purdue too.
Okay. Hey, trust me, row the boat up there in Minnesota. But I just the way they played lately, game than it is for Minnesota. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The next game I've got, and it looks like College Game Day is going to be there this weekend. Number 6, Ohio State at Nebraska. I think the Buckeyes roll over Scott Frost and these Cornhuskers.
It's not going to be looking good for the Cornhuskers, man. Ohio State's probably the top 2 team in this field this year. Ohio State rolls. Their focus.
Okay. A little Pac-12 action for you. Washington State, who we just talked about earlier, who just almost killed me based on their loss to UCLA, looking to come back. They've got a decent quarterback. The quarterback threw 9 touchdowns, John, by the way. So he set a record. He threw 9 touchdowns in the game. They go to Utah. They take on the Utes of Utah, who just lost to USC. So Washington State at Utah. I'm going to take the Cougars again. They're going to right the ship this time.
I think the Cougars do right the ship this time. That's just the kooky Pac-12. I want to call them Pac-10.
Okay, so you got Washington State, and for shits and giggles, I'm going to switch my pick and go to Utah just because I need to start coming back. So I'm going to take the Utes. Sorry, Washington State, off the board with you. Heading up the Big Ten, a couple of Big Ten matchups here. Indiana heading to Michigan State to take on Sparty.
We don't know who the quarterback's going to be. If it's going to be Ramsey, then it's definitely Michigan State. If it's going to be Michael Penix, it's definitely going to be Michigan State.
Oh, uh-oh. put a little swerve on him there. swerve. I've got Sparty
it'll
as well in this game.
It'll be close. It will be close. It'll give Michigan State, you know, a raised eyebrow as far as score, 35-24, something like that.
You think so? See, I don't think it'll be that close.
Yeah, it'll be close.
It's
a different IU.
And the other game, we've got Northwestern at Wisconsin. I think it's a no-brainer. I think Wisconsin rolls in this game.
And got it. Just one of these trap games, but this ain't the team to trap Wisconsin. Wisconsin's going to put on another spectacle.
Okay. The big game of the weekend. The slate didn't look too good. This could be apple picking weekend for everybody. This is where you quit watching college football and you take your wife, your girlfriend, or whatnot, and you go pick some apples this Saturday. So the slate don't look too good. But one of the big games, Virginia, ranked in the top 25, goes and takes on at Notre Dame. The Irish looking for a bounce back after Georgia. Virginia versus Notre Dame. John, does Virginia have a shot?
Of course they got a shot. They are a little bit better team this year, but they're not beating Notre Dame. Notre Dame's going to use that as a resume to try to get back into the top four. Yeah, I don't think it happens, though. But they go. Notre Dame wins.
Okay. I've got the Irish, too, in this game. I just think, they're looking to right the ship. And like you said, build that resume up and see if they can find a way to sneak in and get in that college football playoff. I'm looking, John, as I'm talking. The only other big game, it's not even a big game, but Arizona State. Number 24 at number 23, Cal, who's undefeated. So, you got a top 25 battle between two teams as well. But looking at the roster here, I don't really see Michigan and Rutgers. Texas Tech and Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Oklahoma, I'm going to take the over in that game. That's 73.
Right, I would too. Yeah,
that should be
a show. I like Cal to beat Arizona State.
I'm going to add one more. I just saw. I think because this could go two different ways based on what we've seen the wacky Pac-12. I'm gonna add a second Pac-12 game on there. The USC Trojans, hail USC. They're heading to take on number 22 Washington.
Nah, I like Washington.
Take Washington.
I like Washington.
I'm gonna take Washington too. As much as I wanted to take USC in this game, but with the quarterback issues out there, I think I'm going to stick with them. So, okay. So we've got our picks for week 5. Those are all set. John, now we've got some NFL. Go to our NFL talk. Big game.
Alrighty.
Let's go straight into the big one. Colts, Falcons, locally here. Colts win 27-24 over the Atlanta Falcons. Jacoby Brissett, John, had a great, great, great game. Hey, Vinatieri, he got it right, kicked some good field goals. He got the extra point. Get the doink off the upright for the first one. Zach Pascal, he balled out this weekend in the game yesterday. I thought it was a great game. I was there. I took my girlfriend. We ended up going to the game last night or yesterday. Good crowd. I'll get into a little bit of the fans after we kind of hear your take on the game, but I thought it was a good performance for the Indianapolis Colts. They were 1.5 point favorites. They ended up winning by 3. So I think I looked around and wondered where all these haters were at that were wanting their season tickets back after the performance that was done by Jacoby Brissett. So
Chris Ballas put together a real good team that can, like I said, shoulder the brunt of losing its star player. Coach should be 3-0. You know, that's probably what they're thinking in the back of their minds. If that field goal had been 52 yards, then Adam might have been retired today. But it's good that he saw 5 field goals or extra points go through yesterday, and it's good the Colts came out with a victory. The AFC South kind of looks like it's the Colts to lose, Brandon. I don't want to be arrogant. It's the Colts to lose. Tennessee and Jacksonville, you don't necessarily really believe in, and you kind of know the way to beat. Everybody does. You had to beat Texas. Is their coach going to be their coach? That's a whole deeper conversation. Is their coach going to be their coach after this year? So, again, it's kind of the AFC South is kind of for the Colts to lose. really. They've kind of showed the head and shoulders is they're the best team so long as Adam Vinatieri is reliable and he's kind of like actually got his act together, seemingly. So yeah, I thought it was good. It was good to see Matty Ice push back a little. I don't know what's happened to him and his consistency, like how he's been able to be a commander of offense, like right out on like as soon as you know things would set. Like you know, I've never seen him struggle like this ever since maybe his second year. But that team has definitely regressed because it's built around him and Julio Jones. But it was good to kind of see them push back a little bit. But
yeah, they made a nice comeback in that game. Couple things with Matty Ice. Matty Ice, he always seems like he's worse on the road than he is at home always. And it's like the Ben Roethlisberger philosophy, better at home than on the road. Two things, John. Number one, I feel like Matty Ice is working himself with the Atlanta Falcons into the Eli Manning situation with the Giants, where you were good for a long time and you've been committed with them so long that it's that awkward stage where you don't want to cut them, but you don't want to like play him. I can see Matty Ice in Atlanta being that way in about the next 3-4 years.
3-4. Woo. Maybe next year. After next year, man. He's super inconsistent though. But yeah, good like ultimately still good win for the Colts.
Yeah. Julio Jones, I told Lindsay at the game, I said it's been this first half, I said Julio Jones has been very quiet and it shows on the scoreboard with the Falcons down big. I figured the Falcons would come back and make it a challenge for the Colts. And Matt Ryan finally woke up and started giving Julio Jones the ball. And they end up balling out with over 100-some yards receiving and a touchdown in the corner of the end zone. But, yeah, Julio Jones still a freak in nature, no matter who's throwing him the ball. For Atlanta, Devontae Freeman, I thought, played well rushing. That was kind of his get-right game. He got about 80-some yards rushing and a few catches. But that defense for the Colts played very well, I thought, overall, even with Darius Leonard out. They did lose T.Y. Hilton in the third quarter with a quad injury. He'll be day-to-day. And they also, it was announced today, they lost Malik Hooker, torn meniscus in his knee. He'll be out 4 to 6 weeks for surgery. So that's a hit in the Colts' secondary woes. So he'll be out, but it's funny, he had the injury and he came back and finished the game with that torn meniscus. So that kind of shows how tough that kid is. This weekend, we've got the Oakland Raiders and Chucky coming to town to take on the Colts. So Derek Carr in that passing attack, with Malik Hooker out, it could be, we might need to call in some extra guys for that secondary for the Colts.
They're going to need some help.
I think they get the win still against Oakland.
Yeah, it's going to be real close. It's always uncomfortably close with Oakland anyway in the Colts.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, John, I got to get to these Colts fans. John, I was sitting in the game, and we were sitting there, and there was a family of five behind us, two rows behind us. It was the grandpa, the dad, the wife, and the kids, all of them are at the game. Grandma's at the game, too. And you can tell they've been season ticket holders. But between the grandpa and the dad, John, that entire game, all they did was bitch and moan the entire time like complete whiners. That's all they did. I turned around. I said, my God, are you going to cheer for one thing for your team? Like one thing at all. Every single thing, he was bitching at Jacoby, always bitching about that. There was not 1 second of this game where they cheered for their team. And I hate to say it, but, and Liz even and said it herself was, my God, did these guys even cheer for the Colts at all? Like they're just bitching and complaining about their team the entire time. Unfortunately, there are a lot of Colts fans that I know that fit this mold perfectly. All they do is bitch and moan and complain, and they don't take in the good things that this team is doing. And it also goes with that season ticket holder talk I said. Oh, I'm selling my season tickets. Andrew Luck, this team's going to suck. And they just made the team look bad, and they pulled the rug under our wool, under our eyes. This is Indianapolis Colts fans. I hate to say it, but there is a decent if not small percentage of Indianapolis Colts fans that all they do is bitch about this team and always find something. It's never good. I asked the guy, I said, what is good enough for you? I turned around. I was like, Jay, what is good enough for you? He's like, well, he didn't go through his reads right, or he would have done. So Indianapolis Colts fans are just complete idiots. So most of them.
Oh,
sorry.
Man.
I cheered for the Colts. But John, the fans, they're just whiners. And I'm not going to, and I think it's the city of Indianapolis is what it is. Cause they need, I think even what?
You're going to get ran out of here. Dude, they're going to run you out of here, dude.
The Indiana Pacers. There's Pacers fans that are this way too.
Well, that's Pacers
you know there is. You see it.
This Pacers fans are fickle because this fan base is basketball fickle anyway. It just is, you know.
I have nothing against Indianapolis Colts or the Indiana Pacers. It's just there's a small percentage of their fan base that all they'd like to do is bitch and moan about their team, and nothing's ever good enough for them. And they do, and they bitch and moan loud enough to where six rows in front of them can hear it. And it gets annoying for an entire game.
Oh, man.
Especially when you win the game. That's the crazy part.
Right, especially when you win the game. I get you.
So,
we can't talk about Colts all night. We got to get along to the rest of the team around the league. Unfortunately,
absolutely.
Unfortunately, we got to talk about New England.
Yeah, we do. And they're coming up. First, let's go to my Pittsburgh Steelers. Let's get the Steeler talk out of the way. Steelers go to the 49ers, have a lead late in the fourth quarter. James Conner fumble, sets it up for Garoppolo and then to punch it in for a score. You know, you force five turnovers of San Francisco and you still lose the game. That's rough. I thought Mason did okay. I still obviously think it's a work in progress for him for comfortability, getting used to these different blitzes, the different schemes. This is the first game where they've actually planned for Mason Rudolph as quarterback. So I thought he did okay. Micah Fitzpatrick, who we just traded for last Monday, a week ago today, he had an interception and a forced fumble in his first game with Pittsburgh. So I thought that was a positive sight for there. Steelers go to 0-3. What I tell you, John, I said there are five and 11 or that type of team.
Five wins. 6 and 10,
5 and 11 team. So, did you see any of the Steeler game or any highlights?
They had problems running the ball.
Yes.
I thought, yeah, that's kind of like un-Steeler like, you know, defense is still pretty rock solid. I would say.
Yeah, they forced Rudolph to do a lot of passes and kind of jump coverages. He had the big pass to Juju Smith-Schuster for a touchdown. DeAndre Johnson had some good catches. James Washington had a few, but Vance McDonald was a no-show. Jalen Samuels, the backup running back, didn't get any carries. Benny Snell actually got some carries, who was from Kentucky. But, yeah, James Conner, big fumble towards the end of the game there. Pittsburgh should have had that game wrapped up.
Yeah.
Now it gets worse.
It
gets worse. We got them next Monday night, football. Pittsburgh Steelers, 0-3 at home against the 0-3 Cincinnati Bengals. Monday night football.
Well, the only thing good about Cincinnati is the quarterback. And he's not necessarily, he's good. He's not necessarily great. And he's playing in a contract year. So, but ain't necessarily anything good about their team on either side of the ball. So that's a winnable game. For sure, winnable game, Cleveland is still overhyped. I mean, people want to hitch their wagon so much on that particular team. It's still overhyped. They didn't win. I don't care if you played almost beat the Rams. We don't live in an almost beat league. It's either win. Well, you know, you can tie, I guess, like Detroit did a couple weeks ago. But it's a win or lose league here. They didn't beat the Rams. They don't look like they, you know, I can't take them seriously yet till they beat somebody. And they haven't beaten somebody. So, Brandon, I wouldn't necessarily put my hair on fire because as far as, you know, Pittsburgh season, because even or stay home with that 5-11, you know, because even though the Ravens do look like they are the better team, can the kid, Lamar Jackson, keep that? I mean, I hope he can because it's amazing. but can he keep up that pace? He's running the ball, he's throwing the ball. You know, can he keep up that pace for 16 games?
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, like you said, you keep running around, you're going to get yourself hurt, and we'll see. It'll be a matter of time.
Yeah.
No, I don't either, but, I mean, your odds of getting hurt increase, obviously, the more you move around. So let's go ahead and talk Browns game last night. I watched the entire game. I put money on the Browns, plus the 4, and, John, they're so out of sync, and I think I said this before the season started, the Cleveland Browns' demise is their head coach. And I said it from the beginning. I said it. I know I said it on the show. Freddie Kitchens should not be the head coach of this team. He's in over his head.
He's an offensive lineman coach.
John, do you realize in situations of 4th and 9 in the history of the NFL, this is a stat was looked up by somebody at ESPN who gets paid decent money, some intern probably, actually. In every NFL game where there's been a 4th and 9, this is the very first time in history that they ran the ball on 4th and 9. Ever. And this coach says, oh, well, I guess I shouldn't have ran it. No shit. You shouldn't have ran the football. Are you kidding me? 4th and 9 in the fourth quarter with 6 minutes to go and you run it? That's number one problem I have. Number two,
would I do that?
You have 4 plays inside the 4-yard line, and you can't get in. And 2 of them, Baker is backpedaling back from the 10-yard line back to the 15 off-bounds throws. Number 3, Odell Beckham Jr., how does he not get a sniff in the end zone? You got this guy. He's the highest contract on your team, and you can't give this guy a jump ball? What the hell's going on, John? What the hell is going on in Cleveland? Get this coach out of here.
Well, you put it on the coach. That's on the players, too.
I think it's 1,000% on the coach.
Well, we'll find out if they don't win no more games. That's for darn sure.
That's bad, John. The 4th and 9 play, that solidified me. And in his postgame, yeah, I guess I shouldn't have done that. Yeah. And you know what the problem is as well? Is you have all these brand new assistant coaches inside of Cleveland too. All they are is a bunch of yes men. And the situation is not going to get fixed. They're all a bunch of yes men. Yeah, Freddie, go ahead. You think somebody's going to say, hey, Freddie, guess what? You probably shouldn't fucking run the ball. Sorry, shouldn't run the ball on a 4th and 9 play. You may want to pass it. You think none of his coaches are going to say that to him?
Brandon, you're talking to somebody who had to deal with Coach Chuck Pagano.
I mean, my God. Yeah, but Chuck Pagano is a hell of a lot better coach than Freddie Kitchens. Freddie Kitchens, what credentials does he have besides being a fat slob?
Reel it in.
Exactly. I will take your silence as my answer. That's what Crossroads Sports Radio is, John. We go places where other people don't go. And we say it. There's no censorship on it. And I'm passionate about this because it's so stupid. And I feel bad for this little brother franchise, Pittsburgh's little brother, Cleveland, who had a chance to beat the defending NFC champs. And they had their shots. And it's just stupid play calling that did not get it done. Stupid. So that's about all I have on that. But Chiefs and Patriots, John. They're ahead of the game, ahead of everybody. Go ahead and mark it down, AFC Championship.
I just worry about the Chiefs' defense. And I worry about, you talk about play calling, I worry about Andy Reid's play calling. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
What's your thoughts on New England again this weekend? Just destroying the Jets.
They're a buzzsaw, and they don't let nothing distract them from being a buzzsaw. They don't care nothing about, you know, whoever's in their conference being chumps. They got the 3-0 Buffalo Bills coming up. Buffalo put up a good fight because they're a no-nonsense team that New England kind of fears. New England has problems with no-nonsense teams. So they'll take them very seriously, but they will also beat them very seriously. So
that's very true.
This feel-good story of the Buffalo Bills I mean, it still be feel good. They just have one loss on their win loss column.
Yeah. I don't feel like I don't want to talk about this topic because I'm so over it, and personally and mentally over it. But I feel with us being a sports talk show, sports radio, with everything that's happened lately, I feel like we have to talk about it, even for a little bit. And it's our thoughts on the Antonio Brown thing, man. The guy gets cut on Friday from the New England Patriots. And as soon as it happened, I sent you a text. I go, uh-oh, he cut. AB gone. And then he goes on the Instagram rant or a Twitter rant, calling out Robert Kraft, calling out Ben Roethlisberger, calling out the NFL, all these different things. And then today he says he's enrolled back in school, taking online classes, and it was cute, the type of classes he was taking, management, some kind of negotiation, like a class, and then some other classes, death and spirituality, life and death, spirituality, religious class. And I know we talked a little bit on Twitter on Sunday, me and you, and mm-hmm. I think it was a healthy discussion, and I had no problem with your thoughts on it and my thoughts, because I don't think you're wrong at all. I'm looking at it in one way, you're looking at it another way, and I think both ways are totally accurate. I just think this guy puts so much blame on everything else, that it's his own fault for all his issues. If he would have kept his shown up to practice one more day in Oakland, guess what? You get that $32 million. If you keep your damn mouth shut and not send a stupid text message out when there's a middle of an investigation going on, guess what? You probably make $9 million today as your bonus for signing with the Patriots. The guy just doesn't know when enough is enough. And maybe he needs to sit out a year to get his head right, get something right. And I thought they said it this morning perfect. Jason Whitlock, I think, said it this morning the best. Shout out Ball State, Jason Whitlock.
Mm-mm.
Antonio Brown has centered himself around way too many yes men. You're telling me his friends and quote-unquote friends says, hey, that's a good thing, man. Go ahead and tweet that out about Robert Kraft. Yeah. Go ahead and tweet that out about Ben, or, you know, say you're done with the league. Go ahead and say that, like, all these things he's doing. Yeah, go ahead and don't show up to practice. You don't need practice, man. You know, when you go to a new team, you need to show yourself off. You're not going to get the same respect in a locker room that you may have had in Pittsburgh when you go to Oakland, or when you go to New England that you were in Oakland or Pittsburgh. You're not going to get that respect. You have to earn it when you're in a new place. And I don't think AB expected to have to try to re-earn it from everybody. And we talked about how long is it going to last for him to be in New England before something happens, because you know Belichick and them ain't going to put up with the crap. And it continued to happen and happen. And the guy, I don't know. To me, the guy's a joke. He is. Something has happened. And I date it back to when he got hit by Vontaze Burfict, that CTE or something, and it's just scrambled that dude's head in that playoff game. And he hasn't been
pre-onset CTE. Well, maybe, I don't know. He needs to get – definitely some of his actions suggest that he needs to get his head examined. That's for darn sure. Dude, I've honestly put him on LeVar – like how ESPN said they wasn't going to ever pay attention to or ever have LeVar Ball on their airwaves anymore. I'm not going to talk about AB anymore. That's how I am. But guess what, Brandon? Next year a team will take him.
You know who I think his next team will be, no matter what, if it's this year or next year? I think it's the Baltimore Ravens.
Possible. It's possible that John Harbaugh could manage that attitude. Yeah, possible.
I think that's a landing spot. Plus, he gets to go back at Pittsburgh for two games a year.
Right.
I hate to say it, John, but this whole Antonio Brown situation has made Le'Veon Bell look like a saint from the way his exile went from Pittsburgh.
Well, you know, their exiles was on different wavelengths anyway, man. You know, he just wanted to get paid.
Yeah.
Right? He's wanting to get paid. And Brown wants to get paid, and he wants the limelight to be on him.
Yeah. And you had a rant on Crossroads Sports Facebook page. Go ahead and check it out on there, Jonathan Birdsong. Crossroads Sports rant on Antonio Brown. But John, your thoughts on, and then here's the thing. If you're going to say something on Twitter, go ahead and back it up. Don't be a coward and delete the stuff later. You know, you've already said it. It's already out there. What's your thoughts on his tweets?
His tweets are very deflecting. So they automatically deflect blame, but they automatically also at the same time tell a certain truth about how people are viewed when we talk about things that aren't necessarily can make you go to jail, but are things that we consider you a slime bag, right? So everybody knows, you know, say a little bit about, you can Google it. I mean, I'm not trying to bring up, you know, dig up old dirt, but you can talk about Ben Roethlisberger's his rape, you know what I'm saying, what he went through, allegations, mm-hmm. what he went through, you know, several years ago. You can dig that up. Anybody can talk about, anybody that knows recently about what happened with the owner of the New England Patriots, Robert Kraft, down in Florida, right? And like Brown, you know, some of the things that he's, you know saying, that he's done, there aren't necessarily, you know, sorry, like I said, they aren't necessarily fireable offenses if you were working every day, like a 9-to-5, but the NFL is still a PR job that they have to keep great public relations with the public, because this is people that they take their money, and, you know what I'm saying, they can't have you be perceived as some guy that's wild and out of control, and at the same time we're supposed to revere that on the field.
Yeah,
that's kind of what happened. That's kind of what happened, you know.
Yeah. Antonio thinks it's too much about the sexual assault charges, and it's not.
Right. So he's very deflective. But when he puts things out, like, you know what I'm saying, like the unfairness of, like, but of the unfairness of, like, what, you know what I'm saying, what happened with Kraft, or what unfairness from his lens, what happened, you know what I'm saying, what happened with Big Ben. Again, Brandon, it's just somebody not wanting to take responsibility ultimately. But I'm not gonna say it's necessarily great points, because again, he's coming from a deflecting standpoint. You know, he doesn't want to take responsibility for anything.
There's no
that
track
he's done,
record blowing, with everybody
blowing
else.
Blowing up 29 minutes, right? Well, I mean, track record or no, he makes these fires and then doesn't want to.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And come look at it, and then and then gets mad when, you know, we look at the fire and say, dude, you idiot, why would you start a fire in the middle of your house? You know what I'm saying? And then he wants to say, you know, whatever the case may be, whatever analogy I'm trying to translate, you know what I'm saying? He brings a lot of these things upon himself. I don't know. I I'm tired of talking about it. He's not playing. He's not a factor. It'd be different if he was playing.
Right.
It would be different if he was playing.
He definitely is deflecting. Number two, where I think it's different from the Big Ben situation, and I think it's different from the Robert Kraft situation, and just anybody in general, is that there's a track record of your behavior is what's got you in this situation where you're at now. It's not because, hey, where it's just – you're doing all these things that build up to something big.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's just the sexual assault investigations, that's one thing. The Patriots would still have you on the roster. Okay, it's all this threatening text messages, the extra stuff you're putting on there is what's drawing bad light to yourself and the organization. That's stuff that keeps adding up and building up to it. So to say, oh, well, I'm treated different because I'm such and such or whatnot. No, it's because you have a different track record that's kind of all built on top of this based on instead of what these other people have had, you know. And that's my take. And like I said, I'm sick and tired of talking about Antonio Brown, but we have to talk about him because he's polarizing and it's what's hot in America right now. And I would feel be remiss if I didn't say something to our audience about this, you know? So, what else, John? How about the Kyle Allen and those Carolina Panthers coming back? No Cam Newton. No Scam Newton. Got to call him his real name. No Scam Newton. you kind of chirped back on my Twitter thing today. I said, hey, the best quarterbacks are already playing this weekend for them, week four.
Man, I didn't even pay attention to the game. I had them losing. I think that's actually one of my ones I got wrong. I had them losing. Kudos to them for bouncing back. But Brandon, the NFC South looks like the Saints bounce back as well.
Teddy Bridgewater.
Now they can't beat. I don't know if they can beat Dallas.
Uh-oh.
You know, without.
You sound like Skip Bayless now.
I don't know if they can beat Dallas. I'm not saying Dallas is the best. All this remains to be seen. You know, there's still a whole lot of football left to be played. Just because the team jumps out 3-4-0 doesn't mean they're going to be, you know, they can obviously go on a 5-game losing streak. You know, so you know that. Because who would have thought that the Giants would have won? I'm not saying they're going to be contending for the NFC, but, like, who would have thought with the rookie quarterback they would have won? And they were a field goal away from losing with Tampa Bay. So, I don't know.
Danny Dimes?
There's going to probably be some teams that jump up, you know what I'm saying, 6-7-0 straight. And then but I think it's going to be some teams on the back end that we're going to have to start paying attention to as the season progresses.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was a good Giants comeback win. Daniel Jones, Saquon with the high ankle sprain, another guy on my fantasy team out now pretty much for the whole rest of the fantasy football season. But I think if you can get Saquon right, I think Daniel Jones is the future for the Giants. I thought, you know, it's one game, yes, and it's Tampa, yes, but it's on the right track. I mean, the dudes ran in for a touchdown, you know, and I'm not saying he's the heir apparent. I'm not saying he's going to be the next greatest quarterback as Willie Joe Namath.
Well, he's
but,
the heir apparent. He's the heir apparent.
He is the heir apparent.
Eli Bennett ain't getting snaps no more unless somebody gets hurt.
Yeah, he held that clipboard. But, John, we got our guy calling in. Let's bring him on real quick. We got a few minutes left.
Thanks.
Sweet Lou, how are we?
All right.
Good. You have a good weekend?
Yeah, I did. I did see the game yesterday with the Giants and the Bucks. And I had a feeling that the Giants were going to win anyway yesterday because I really have no confidence in Tampa Bay whatsoever. So I'm not surprised that they were able to pull up that comeback win anyway. But I'm not sold on Jones yet. Okay, he has a spectacular debut. I'll give him that. But, you know, it's just one game. What else you got? Can you keep it up or is it just a fluke?
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know,
100% agree.
The deal. Oh, his jersey sales went skyrocketing through the roof. Oh, he's fantastic. People, he's a rookie. He's played one game. He is not a superstar yet. He's got a long way to go before he matches up with Manning and Phil Simms, et cetera, et cetera. You get the idea.
One game does not make
you a star.
John, that's that New York media, right? That's just sitting there just building him up and trying to do all that. What was your thoughts, John? What did you think of Daniel Jones yesterday?
To me?
Yeah, you.
No, I thought you said no. He's ahead of the curve. You want him out there? They made the right decision. I still think they took him a little too high, but they made the right decision. And barring him get an injury, yeah, he's gonna put up some numbers for the Giants. I don't. He'd probably put up better numbers whenever Saquon comes back. But we'll see. There's probably going to be a game that comes up. There's going to be a big boulder in front of him. He's going to just try to move, and you know, he's still going to be on rookie curve. We know this, but yeah, Eli Manning era is done.
Yeah, and the Giants also get back next week. Well, not this week coming up, but the following week they get their number one wide receiver, Golden Tate. He'll be back after a week four suspension. So another weapon for Daniel Jones. And Wayne Gallman, I guess, is going to take over the running game now for the Giants. So we'll see what happens unless they go get a veteran.
Yeah.
So, by the way, Sweet Lou, John
yes.
Johnson yesterday, he was talking about turning back the clock for Frank Gore, the legend.
Really?
Man, Frank Gore keeps it like – fine wine. gets better over time.
Yeah, Buffalo. So that's a big matchup. Buffalo and New England next week. Up, is it in Buffalo?
It is in Buffalo. It is in Buffalo.
I guess
oh boy.
It's going to be a tough game.
Is this the one letdown they always get one a year usually? One or two?
Yes.
Yeah. So, Sweet Lou, what was your thoughts on the Jets Patriots game this past weekend?
Well, I'm not surprised by the result, but hey, at least they covered the spread.
They did.
So that's some consolation. I thought 23 points was asking a bit too much, to be honest.
Yeah.
I thought it was. You know,
I mean, they are
NFL players. Miami was our biggest problem, you know, because that was like our toughest rival, you know, and we always had tough against them, especially in Miami. Now it's New England, so, you know, times have changed.
Sweet Lou, I got a hypothetical for you. Should the New York Jets just go ahead this season and, you know, obviously with Darnold out and tank? Because, listen, if you don't tank, you're letting the team that's in your division have the number one pick overall. Why not tank yourself and try to cuck them, I guess, is the proper term to use, to keep them from getting the number one pick?
Well, it's tough to say who's going to get the number one pick right now because right now, although the Jets do have prime position, but don't forget, Miami is in the same position as we are. So, you know, it's going to be, you know, also a battle against them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll see.
We're only 3 weeks into the season. It's a little bit tough. It's a little bit hard to say that right now.
Yeah, and Le'Veon said, you know, he put out a little Instagram post that, you know, everybody trying to break us down, but we're going to be – listen, give it a few more games, and all that losing will do something to you. So – what else you got, Lou?
I mean, don't think about it right now. I mean, you know, wait till about like another month or so.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the bad news is on the Giants that Barkley is out for 4 to 6 weeks, 4 to 8 weeks.
Yep, I think it'll be the 8 week mark because at 8 weeks that'd be their bye week, so it'd be stupid not to bring him back after it, which hurts my fantasy team.
Yeah, 8 weeks would be more realistic. Come back after the bye.
Yep, absolutely.
There's 6 weeks left, and you know, and you'll maybe make a run at the playoffs. Maybe.
Are the Mets done?
Oh, I certainly hope so.
Really, no, no,
well, I'll put it to you this way. Mathematically, no. Realistically, more than likely. Because even if they win every game from here until Sunday, I don't think you're going to see both wildcard teams lose all 7 games. So it's highly unlikely that the Mets are going to have a chance.
Yeah, I think the Cubs are pretty much donezo now after I think they lost straight.
Yeah,
4 games.
Or 5 straight. So, losing to St.
Louis
was not good.
They are playing crappy teams right now, but that doesn't even mean anything else. That doesn't mean really anything either. Even though you're playing the Fish for 3 games, still, it doesn't matter. Does it mean you're going to win all 3 games? No. Even if you're
right
at home. And you know you're playing the Fish, right?
How big is it for the Yankees getting back Giancarlo Stanton?
Well, Stanton's like, you know, like an Achilles heel. So I don't know if it's going to be that much important. You know, he hasn't done too much for us. I think we're better off without him.
I am shocked.
Thank you.
I am shocked, Lou, because I see it, and I'm going to compare it to the 2009 run where Alex Rodriguez was out for a majority of the season and then kind of came back right before the playoffs and got hot and carried New York through that postseason. I see the same thing with Stanton. Coming back,
well,
right? I see the similarity.
Stanton is no Rodriguez.
He is not. He's got more power. But I see comparisons to those two with coming back and the type of run the Yankees are going to make. So,
all right.
Just some food for thought.
Oh, absolutely.
So.
But, you know, it's tough to compare, you know, one to the other. I mean, they're two different players, so it's really hard to say what's going to happen.
And I know the Yankees haven't won the division in some time, so it's been a while. I think 2012 or 7 years. So, but John, I'll tell you this: I'm a little embarrassed because I used to remember when the Yankees won divisions, and they didn't celebrate and party as hard as they're partying now in that locker room for winning a division. It was all business for a World Series back then.
Yeah.
What'd you say, John?
What happened to the good old days?
Yeah. Yeah, they got ruined. John, do you have anything left for Sweet Lou?
Nah, dude. Lou, thanks for calling, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you. All right.
Thanks, Lou.
Thanks. Sure.
All right, that was Sweet Lou. We didn't get the plug in, but other than that, wanted to keep it try an hour and a half show this evening, so we're running about a minute or two behind, which is fine. But John, any closing comments, anything? SmackDown comes back next week, Friday night SmackDown on Fox. There's a huge plug for it and everything. So you got your boy Brock Lesnar and Kofi.
Yeah, I'm not watching that. Sorry, I'm not watching that. I might catch a little bit of Raw tonight, but I'm not watching SmackDown. I probably will. Take that back. I probably will watch it. It's the first show. Check it out.
Yeah. Any final things for our fans? You know, John, we may be able to do sometime this week. Depends with schedules, but maybe do a crossover show for an hour. Who knows?
Yeah, we can. Just want to thank everybody for supporting, sharing, liking, and listening. All those things that make Crossroads Sports radio show what it is. Just thanks everybody for listening.
Have a good week.
Crossroads Sports.